This week we are, I think, up to our fourth installation, or installment, I keep saying installation for some reason, of our Radical Responses to Relevant Reality series. Again, just putting it out of the fancy terms, we are studying 20th and 21st century response literature to what I find, at least, and what I think you'll agree to, are fascinating topics. And each week we learn from a different tshuva sefer, a different book of responsa. And this week we're going to be looking at a tshuva from the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Woldenberg. Rabbi Woldenberg, you can look at his bio over here. Again, like most weeks, due to a limited amount of time, I don't want to get too much into the history. But one thing to note about him is that, first of all, he was a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel. And he was the go-to man for Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. When they had questions about end of life or crazy kind of topics that we might talk about, interesting scenarios, he was their go-to person. So he got a lot of fascinating medical ethics questions. What we're going to be looking at today is a rather sensitive topic. It's sometimes referred to as gender reassignment surgery, sometimes referred to as sex reassignment surgery. Is someone able to close the door over there at the kitchen? Just some noise coming from there. Thank you, Israel. Yeah. Okay. It's a sensitive topic in the sense that a lot of people, it generally comes from, I think, with the DSM-5 categorizes gender dysphoria, where a person of a particular gender, if someone's male, he has inclinations to feel female, and there's all sorts of repercussions, and many people, I'm not going to say many, I don't have the statistics on me, but a significant amount of people choose to go under a certain form of surgery, which replaces the genitals of their original sex to the alternative sex that they want to transition to. The Tzitz Eliezer deals with this in a tshuva in volume 10. You'll see it on the second page, source number 2. His real topic is not gender reassignment surgery, though. His real topic is actually talking about heart transplantation, and only later on does he talk about gender reassignment surgery. I'll just be clear, I know also that I don't think anyone here is giving me any looks, but there's some sort of controversy over whether you call it gender reassignment surgery or sex reassignment surgery. I don't mean anything in particular by choice. I use them interchangeably. And as far as I know, there's no halacha deciding which way you want to say it. This tshuva begins with a simple question, or not so simple question. If there is a person, Reuven, has his heart surgically removed from his body, and it is planted into the body of Shimon, who needs a new heart, does Shimon assume the identity for all halachic purposes of Reuven, the man that he got the heart from? That's his question. I mean, what would you say to that? What's your impression? Okay, a reason?
Because people have transplants all the time. Fingers, eye, corneas, all kinds of things. Why the heart?
Why the heart? Excellent question. So that's what he talks about right in the first paragraph. Look at Os Aleph. Those who want to follow along in English, you could look a few pages later. Section number 1. He says, look in the bold, Halevu melech ha'evarim. The heart in rabbinic literature is referred to as the king of the limbs. It is the primary organ. Now, we might want to challenge that assumption, which he does later on, spoiler alert. Wow. But
sometimes in rabbinic literature, the heart is seen as the brain, but now we know that the brain is the brain.
Okay, very good. So he's going to address these notions later on. Yeah.
The heart, if you look at it, when they talk that way, they thought the heart was the most important organ. We now know the heart is nothing more than a pump.
Okay, that's true.
I say it, even a person without a heart, mm-hmm. theoretically, they put in an electric pump and it can exist for a while.
Right.
Also, the rabbis sometimes describe other internal organs as being the seat of emotions and so on, and that's not accurate. The question is, how do we refer to aspects of science that the rabbis were mistaken on? Are we required to...
Right. So that's a whole other shear, but your point's well taken. But what's fascinating about this assumption is beyond the assumption that the heart is the primary organ in which the identity of the person rests, he's assuming that a piece of someone's body, it defines what their identity is. Meaning that if we can zero in and zoom in and we look at that person, if we transfer an arm, we transfer a finger to someone else, it doesn't matter. It's just a limb. But for some reason, the heart is considered to be the prime location of this person's identity. And it's fascinating the fact that identity or someone's soul would be contained within one limb or one organ of the body. That's just an interesting theological assumption. Again, all of these things are going to be challenged, so your points are well taken. Let's move on. If you look further, so he says that the heart services the moach and the kaved. It services the brain and the liver. And that it's the primary, that it is the primary organ. Now we're going to run through a few rejections of this topic. Rejection number one that he brings in is that once you transfer a heart from someone's body, someone who's presumably he's a trefa. I think he's talking about a case where he already suffered from brain death and the heart is still beating and you're taking from his body. Once you're transferring that heart to someone else's body who also is not in such good condition, apparently, the heart loses its status as melech levarim, as the king of the organs. This still assumes that a heart is considered to be the primary organ, but he's going to reject that premise very soon also. So rejection number one is, once you transfer a heart from someone else's body, there's a din of trefa, it's no longer considered melech evarim. But in general, the heart would be considered the prime location of a person's halakhic identity. Change? What change?
When you've transferred the heart, what change physically?
Okay, good. So he has, what he's saying is, I think, is that it's, I need to look more carefully at this, but I think he's pointing out that since there's a status of trefa, that somehow, I know I'm with you also. It's, I'm a little vague on why that's a, why that's a substantive reason.
No, I think I can say it.
Yeah.
200 years ago or 300 years ago, yes, indeed he do. People believed that the heart was the whole shtick.
Okay.
But now we've come out and we say, we find people living without hearts.
All right. That's so interesting. What he brings up over here is he says, if it's a reductio ad absurdum, he says, if we go with this assumptionist premise that the heart is the locus of identity, of halakha identity for a person, what happens if we develop a plastic heart, an artificial heart? Okay, so maybe in his time they didn't have it yet.
They did, and what they do is they use it in transition.
Okay, good. So no, they did have it. He talks about that. Yeah. Using it for a transitional period.
But that might not continue. Maybe it gets to the point where it can be used permanently.
Right, and let's say, okay, good, and excellent. Let's go a step further. Let's say they get to the point a plastic heart can be used permanently. So what? And then the person's not going to have any halakhic identity once we put in a fake heart? It's a ridiculous premise to begin with, like all of you pointed out. I'm with you on that. But that's the that's his question that he's raising. Next, his next rejection is that once the heart leaves the Reuven's body, it leaves the first person's body, and now it's just no longer connected to a person's body, it loses its shame lave. It no longer has a status of a person's heart. It's now just like any limb that gets separated from a human body. And therefore, you don't have to worry about Shimon assuming Reuven's halakhic identity because the heart is no longer has the same status as it was when it was in Reuven's body. When it was in Reuven's body, it's Reuven's heart. Once it's taken out of Reuven's body, it's nobody's heart. It's not even, and he says even further, it's not even considered a heart for halakhic purposes anymore. It doesn't have a shame lave.
That's interesting because, you know, in the secular world, we would say exactly the opposite. Let's say we get to the place, which we might get to, where you could do a head transplant. Mm-hmm. You take a living human being, and you put this living head with the brain in it onto, let's say you take off the cancerous body or whatever is the body that's going to die.
Right.
You put the healthy head onto another body.
Or an android.
Right. You would never think that the person has changed.
Right. Right. No, exactly. And that's,
the head is different than the heart. The head is the seat of consciousness.
But that's not what the Chazal thought.
Oh, we're going to get there. Okay. Let's move on. We're going to get to the brain in a moment.
There are a number of instances where they talk about the heart and what is it, the kaved or whatever it is, as being the seat of the emotions and being the seat
of the intellect.
So there's also, we have to make a distinction between, I'm not sure exactly what you're quoting, but sometimes there's agadic literature and then there's halakhic literature. So you notice he's not so concerned with the Agada. He's, for the most part, it's in Sages. If you look, he's quoting halachic text. We haven't done so much in Sages. I really want to get to the latter part of the Tshuva, which is where he talks about gender reassignment surgery. That we'll do inside. Going on to Os Dalid, section number 4, he says, Ushlish is Suhusav Yehusa Shal Adam Ininimitz Bati Benifra Bechelke Varav Tiena Chashim Yoser. Kiim Kel Ha Ruach Vanashama Asher Bekir Bohamehem. So he says as follows. It's not what you think. It's not simply that the heart isn't the seat of the emotions. It's no part of your body, or seat of, sorry, the seat of identity. No part of your body is considered to have your identity. It's, there's a neshama inside your body, and this neshama is what holds your halakhic identity. Now he's getting slightly metaphysical on us. And he says, and this is a great line here, Umana chona ha'agdara shekosei bezeh ha'sam sofer al Torah, ki aguf einenu ha'adam elatik asuya me'afar. What's the body? The body is this vessel that's made from the earth. And inside this material body, there is the, lies the soul, lies the intelligence of a person. And it's his knowledge, it's his consciousness, his soul, that is what defines who he is. It's not the lave. And then, okay, now we're finally at that part where you've all been yelling at me the entire time. He says, look at section number, hey, this is the part you've all been waiting for. Dim kein, afil nir tzli yachetz es atzmius ha'odam el macho, haray yesh li yachetz yoser el amoach. And even if you don't buy this whole soul being the seat of identity argument, you want to locate a certain part of the human body and say, you know, let's say we transfer some limb from the body onto an android or to someone else's body. At what point do we say it's no longer one identity but becomes the next? I would think the brain. I would think, like you mentioned, like the head. If we're going to situate the locus of identity somewhere, it's at least going to be the brain. It doesn't make sense for it to be the heart. That is the entire first part of the tshuva. The entire first part of the tshuva is concerned with the transfer of identity through a heart transplantation. The next part of tshuva, still staying within the same theme, is going to talk about the transfer of identity. But instead of it coming from a heart transplantation, it talks about the transplantation of genitalia. And this is where everything gets very, well, it's, I think it was interesting until now, but now we get to our primary topic. Mechager Gadol, look at Os Vav, or section number 6. Mechager Gadol yesh anam lachgor b'hecha shem ischolel shinoi mehusi organi b'guva shel adam go b'nisapech mizachar nekeva o lehepech. What happens when someone transfers from a zachar to nekeva, from male to female, or vice versa? He says that this is starting to be written about in newspapers, and we certainly see it written about more today. This tshuva is written a number of years ago. It's only become more frequent. But look what he writes also. He says, back then, it was like only specific instances that someone had a reassignment surgery, and it was very infrequent that we would hear about these things. That's why it made headlines back then.
It's covered by Medicare.
It's covered by Medicare, okay. So his question is, we already covered, okay, heart transplantations, maybe transferring the brain, but definitely transferring the heart, he concludes, doesn't change someone's identity when they receive a heart from another person. But what if they forget about their identity as another person, as a person? What about their gender identity? What could that change? Does that have the possibility of changing in halacha? And I want to raise, what would be the nafgaminas, right? Okay, what?
Every single mitzvah has a suffix tumtum androgynous.
Okay, so he's going to deal with Androgynos and another tshuva.
Are you allowed to get married in the other way?
Ah, are you allowed
besides
to get
which, the whole thing, who would do these operations? I don't understand. This is like a Jewish veterinarian can't do certain operations that
okay.
On animals. And how would a Jewish doctor be
very good
to do this?
Okay.
After all, you have a right to heal. You don't have a right. This is not part of healing.
And I want to, if we don't get to the...
I don't think he's addressing it.
And wait, but
addressing if
first
it's
of all, you're not allowed to do
what Allah gives back doesn't have. That's right.
Okay, so good.
Right. Yeah.
Marriage. Okay, marriage is a huge area where it has very obvious implications. But what I want to bring up, I hope I get a chance to talk about it later, but we might get stopped early, so I want to say it now. Notice that Tzitz Eliezer is not going to be talking about the permissibility of undergoing such a surgery. He's talking about bidi'eved. Ex post facto, if someone went through such a surgery, does halacha recognize that change of gender identity? He's not talking about, is it mutter to undergo the surgery to begin with? And if you look...
Or to do it to begin with.
And if you look at the later...
Either the doctor to perform it, or the patient...
That's interesting. I wasn't even thinking from the doctor's perspective, I'll tell you what the big issue is. Genital mutilation. Usser. You're not allowed to mutilate, especially the male genitalia. I think the female one is midrabanan, but I would need to look into that. But definitely... Usur d'oraisa to mutilate male genitalia. So if a man wants to undergo a gender reassignment surgery, that is not the discussion of the Tzitz Eliezer. And if you look actually later on, it's source number 7. Look at source number 7. This is in English. It's an interview with Rabbi Bleich from YU, right? He's one of our preeminent authorities on medical ethics. He says... True, the Tzitz Eliezer might say he would sit on the other side in the chitza. But remember, this is a quote, but remember, he did not endorse the procedure. And that's very evident from here as well. So let's, without any further ado, that's all by way of introduction. I want to see the sources.
Well, where was that interview conducted?
You know what's really funny? I was doing some research into it. I found it on this it's a website. It's an organization called... Let me find it. I think there's an LGBTQ organization called Keshet. They published it on their website, but if I did some research, I think there was some girl or young woman who attended Stern College, and for the Observer, one of the YU papers, she conducted an interview with Rabbi Bleich, wrote it up for the YU paper, and then this organization got hold of it, maybe she's involved, and they published it on their website. But I don't think we have any reason to assume that's not what he said.
I'm just curious in what venue that.
Right, so it's on the source sheet. I put down the name of where it's from. I put down a link. You could check it up online. Okay, let's look. Okay, one more question, and we'll move on. Yeah.
I'm not mistaken, and I really don't know what I'm talking about totally.
Yeah.
Doesn't the Gemara talk about some people that were born with both sets?
So Yitzi brought it up. That's Androgynous.
Let me take him back to that age.
That's going to be
the status of that person. You couldn't change her physically.
So if you go to the last Mishnayos at the end of Seder Zrayim, it has a bunch of different Mishnayos that talk about how he's considered male in certain ways, female in certain ways, how we go lechumra, and we rule stringently to be worried that the androgynous consider both. That's it'll take us a little too far afield, but I'm happy to show you source material on that afterwards. I want to move on. We're not going to have time to go through the topic, but let's move on. All right? This is the part I really want to get to. He quotes, the Tzitz Eliezer quotes precedent. There is a tshuva from Rav Pelagi. I believe he was a Turkish. He lived in Turkey. So we're dealing with a Sephardi posek here. He is dealing with a case where, here, let's read it inside. Second paragraph in section 6. Kain reisi b'sefer anikra b'shem Yosef es achiv la'rav Yosef Pelagi. Skip down a little bit to the underline. Mahu adin lezosha haisa nekeva veishes ish v'naz zachar. Let's say there's a woman who's married to a man, and then she transitions into a man. Unclear what the circumstances are. I don't think they had the technology to do the surgery, but somehow that happened. Imsarch ruvin zelagarsha beget kedas Moshe Yisrael. Is he going to divorce her with a or him or I don't know what to call the person now with a get kevish haisa ishto eishes ish. Since, okay, they entered into a marriage legitimately and halachically, so maybe the only way to break this marriage is with a get. O Dilma, inotzara kimish inena isha kiyamish, or maybe you don't need to give a get to your former wife because she's no longer your wife because it's not a she anymore, it's a he. And there can't be a marriage between two he's in halacha. What would you say? You would agree with what?
Well, your marriage...
Let's take one at a time.
Between A and B. There's no more B.
There's no more B?
I would agree with the first one.
What's the first one?
The first one is people can have any surgery they want, okay? But the person was a female. Forget the sex reassignment. Forget all the things you're talking about. today. What if there was someone, was a man, and it was in some terrible accident? He ceases being a man. You can call it a surgery. What if a woman was in some accident and it destroyed whole parts of her body?
But she'd be genderless, you're saying. Right.
If she lost her chest and her whole bottom, she wouldn't be a woman anymore?
Okay. Wait, one at a time.
We give it names. We call it surgery. This,
very good.
And the other, but
point well taken. What do you want? Someone over here on the table.
You go first,
right? I go last.
No. Oh, okay.
We're gonna move on if none of you want to go.
you can do what you want exteriorly. We know today if you're an XX or an XY, there's nothing you can do that will inherently change that. That is part of your makeup. So, if you entered into a marriage with someone, it was a man and a woman, and it was a halachic marriage, and that's how you started,
right?
You're going according to halacha, then you have to enter according to halacha regardless of what the outcome was, because it's still at the time of the event.
Are you saying the genetics should decide?
The genetics should decide.
Very, okay, excellent. Thank you for bringing up that point. Look at the next source. There are two tshuvas from Etzitz Eliezer, two important tshuvas on this topic, in my opinion. The second one you'll see is in volume 11, is in Chelek Yud Aleph. This is a fact. Remember, I told you at the beginning of the shir, that Etzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, was the go-to rabbi for Shari Tzedek Hospital, and he got fascinating questions. Here is a case that he got from a doctor. The case is as follows. There was a baby that was born, and this baby seemed to have male genetics, right, XY chromosomes, but on the exterior had primarily female genitals. And the specific, he actually, because a doctor writing the question, he managed to identify the anatomical structure and figure out how much it was female, how much it was male. So we identified, it says here, it's a lot of transliteration, so I was able to make it out, but V'ever kitantan hanirka clitoris, he located a clitoris, and also located the labia. However, when he said, betoch aches hasafos hayagush betzuras eshech, when you look a little further, there seemed to be some sort of organ that resembled male testicles. And so it's a very complicated case where there seems to be primarily female genitals, but there's a little bit of male in there, but the genetics are male. So we're looking on the
hybrid.
So we don't know it. We don't know. Like the doctor, I think, was somewhat confused himself. I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor. I can't say. I can only tell you what it says in the tshuva over here.
Right.
So what we have is a fascinating case where it's genetically, right? Your position is we should look at the genetics, XY chromosome, male.
Right.
What do you guys think that Etzitz Eliezer is going to say? All right, we don't know yet.
Go after the
Eber? Why? What would be the svar to do that? What's the logic?
That's what the simanim are.
Ah, okay. Very good.
But the doctor says he has some Evarim of each.
Oh, so what do we do? So excellent. Let's look at his answer.
This is not a new question. Doctors have been dealing with this for a long time, and they often have to make difficult choices.
Yes.
Early in life, they want to make a choice before the child should wear, and so on. And
this might not be a new scenario, but at least as far as I know, this is the first piece of halachic literature that I'm aware of that addresses such a question. So doctors may have been doing what they thought was appropriate until now, but what's halakhically appropriate is about to be decided by the Etzitz Eliezer. So which is? Look in the highlighted section. He says, look in the bold in the highlighted section. Or even a little bit before that. He says that there's male genetics. But he says, l'chein da'ati, that it's better, that we should consider kefishu dino yehid kedin nekeva. We should treat this baby as a nekeva. Why? Here's the most fundamental part of this tshuva, in just in halachic methodology. Ki ha'evarim hachitzonim hanirim la'ayin hu hakoveya b'halacha. It's the external organs that can be perceived and observable by the naked eye, that those are the sole criterion that determine the gender of the baby. Halacha doesn't, according to the Etzitz Eliezer, the genetics does not define the gender of the baby. It is the organs. It's the external organs that are perceived by the eye. That is the way halacha works. So what comes out of something very fascinating, and he's going to do that back in our other tshuva as well, is that because he takes such a conservative approach to halacha that we can't update and get with the times when it comes to genetics and modern science, he comes out with what one might argue to be a radical position, which is even if someone is genetically male, if they, based on their organs, appear to be female, they are female. And I just want to address one question that might be coming to mind, which is, what about the genital mutilation? He deals with that. He says, he gives a few reasons. One is, look in the bold in section number 2, Ein lo evare zichrus. First of all, the little bit of testicles there, he doesn't consider it to be an actual male organ. It's already somewhat destroyed or not developed to begin with. Number 2, we might be dealing with an androgynous, which he says there wouldn't be a problem of removing the genitals. There wouldn't be this iser to deal with. And then he also brings in a certain idea that haskal haisa bidei shemayim, that actually this mutilation began naturally, or bidei shemayim, from heaven, literally. So he uses a few reasons, which at least I find compelling, to show why this isn't a normal case of where someone's choosing to take a transitional surgery or reassignment surgery. But what comes out from this, and I think is very, he doesn't say it in black and white, what I think comes out from this that follows logically is someone who has male genitalia, someone who's already has the male organs and decides voluntarily to undergo a reassignment surgery and become female, that would be usher. Because you wouldn't have the heter milisir. This is an abnormal case. The baby was born in a certain condition. So it made sense, according to Tzitz Eliezer, to make the baby a full nekeva, to make it her female.
I mean, I don't see any sense where the rabbis recognize what we're doing nowadays, which is someone has a sense. They're completely male, or they're completely female. There's no issues, there's no problems, there's no deficits, nothing. But they have an internal sense in their mind, just like sometimes there are other psychological disorders where someone who is thin looks in the mirror and they see themselves as fat or whatever. They're right? Mm-hmm. So they look at themselves and they have a sense, and we go according to that sense. And there isn't a sense, that thing among the rabbis. But here's the other question, which is this. If someone is, let's say, genetically a male or genetically a female, mm-hmm. then if you just go according only to how things look, then you're ignoring what's going to happen when they hit puberty. And that's a very serious thing and will require a lot of medications that have a lot of very serious, cases, life-changing and even threatening effects.
This is by no means, a simple matter.
Maybe it needs to be considered because it's a very big deal.
So that's why he reached out to someone like the Tzitz Eliezer, who is an expert in medical halacha, and there are very few that could be on his stature. That's why this went to the top. This didn't just go to your average Joe pulpit rabbi. This went up to the Posek Hador, because this is such an important question, and it has so many ramifications, like you just said. That's exactly why it came to his desk.
What decision you make when baby's 10 days old?
I think the tshuva mentioned that it was 6 months, but I don't know if that makes a difference to your point. What? Okay, that's it. Ezra says not. We're gonna get to Raya Blech hopefully very soon. The Havamina, it should. Does anyone want to explain?
That's right. It'll be nicker when they hit puberty. The body is gonna start doing things, and then you're going to have to do sometimes dangerous things to that person to undo it, which can affect the person's lifespan.
Right. One second. We need one at a time.
But that's not hormones. Hormones are. I'm saying they're organs, so they can produce those things. So women have different hormones than.
That's right.
That is genetics.
Why do you think women have those hormones? Because they have different genetics.
It's physiology, not genetics.
Everyone. We're running low on time. I want to ask for a favor. For 5 minutes, I just want to go straight through some sources, and then I'll let you know when we're reopening for questions, because I want to make sure that we actually walk out knowing the material we need to know to talk about this intelligently. Otherwise, I'd be doing you all a disservice. Sound fair? Okay, thanks. Go back to the original tshuva for a moment. Right, we skipped ahead because you rubbed the genetic argument, but what we missed was like a really fascinating line in the volume 10 Tshuva. So if you remember, he was quoting Rav Pelagi. And Rav Pelagi, look in the highlighted paragraph. First, he says in the bold, right? Remember, our question was for Hilchos Gittin, for marital law, if the wife turns into a man, does the husband need to give this now man a get, or maybe just there's no need for one because marriage is only defined between a man and woman, not between a man and man. So he says, "Delot sarich get dezacher hu atav lo isha." And look at the end of the paragraph in the bold. Al kol panim nir lefi niyastaiti de einot sarich ruven li teinget le ishto shnas ish gamor v'shalim. Ruven does not need to give his once wife a get because his wife is no longer his wife. It's now another person, and the marriage dissipates on its own, because marriage could only be held between a man and woman, and once it's two men, there's not a man and woman to hold that marital bond together. And now this is like a really fascinating line. This one, it's worth looking inside just in case you don't believe what I'm about to say. The gam amina, oh here, Eino Omer in the bold in that small paragraph highlighted. Eino Omer shlo asani isha mishum de kvar natsis isha tchila bebeten imo. So what bracha, right? This is the question. So this woman changes into a man. She comes into, or he comes into shul the next day. I don't even know about the mechitza thing. Forget it. Does it come into shul? I'm not going to talk about that. Opens up the sitter. Does this person say shalo asani isha or shalo asani kirtzono? Or maybe doesn't make either of those. What's he about to say? Ella, look what he says. Ella mevarich, baruch ata Hashem elokim ha'olam, shefchani le'ish. He introduces a new formulation for a bracha. Now, I just want to say, I'm not sure which one you think is less orthodox, the idea of recognizing the transition of gender or introducing a new bracha. Which one rubs your conservative halachic sensitivities more?
Why wouldn't you
this is on, I don't have the page's number, but it's in the Tshuva.
It's the third page in,
towards the bottom, third to last paragraph. And he said, right, so this is just a fascinating line, and that's why I wanted to come back to this.
I'm gonna read
it one more time for anyone who missed it, but look on the source sheet just so you can see yourself. The Gamamiya to Ishkazesha Isha Tchil Venepach Ish nearly takes Omer Birchas Ashachar. When this person who changes from one gender to the other, when this person comes to say the blessings in the morning, Ain Omer Shlo Asani Isha, that person cannot say Shlo Asani Isha, we should take far nas isha tchiabi batan emo. Yatzla Avra Olam Betsura Isha. When this person was originally born, this person came out as a girl, as a woman, as an Isha. So, can't say Shalosani Isha because this person was created an Isha. That wouldn't be true. But then can't say, Shalosani Kurtzano. That doesn't make sense either.
No.
Rather, he introduces a new bracha, Baruch Atashem Kenachalam Shavchani Le'ish. That you turn me into a man. Now, very quickly, before you come with the questions. I don't think this tshuva, this Rav Pelagi, is talking about gender reassignment surgery, because I don't think they had the ability to do that back then. So correct me if I'm wrong, doctors in a crap. This is a quote from Rav Pelagi. I don't know, are you more? Would you be more surprised if it was Rav Pelagi or Tzitz Eliezer saying it? But it's Tzitz Eliezer.
Is this the intervention?
Oh, wait, one sec. What?
Is this divine intervention that you're saying? That
I'm really not, I would need to maybe look at the Rav Pelagi Tshuva inside and see how this happened, but I don't think it's the surgery. What?
If you had a method, they presumably would have the way to cut off one of them.
Yeah, but the difference between how you go to bed at night and
mm-hmm.
Only in the Hollywood do you go to bed a woman and wake up a man or a horse.
That's attributing it to God.
All right.
And in the case where you don't have these heterim, it's sort of attributing it to God, this varavera.
Okay, but I just want to raise this interesting point that I'm just curious, what rubs people, the halachic sensitivities more. The idea of recognizing a gender transition from someone who's originally born a woman to become a man and recognized like that halachically, or just the introduction of a new bracha that Chazal weren't misaking. That's just something to think about. It's funny to me. It's more the bracha, but you know, you can make arguments either way. Okay, well, that's
in the cases where people are born with
my goal here, you know, and this is also, you know, I think I introduced before every shiur, maybe it's too late, it goes up on YTOR, so you might not want to express views that you don't want on the internet. But I'm trying to be descriptive, not prescriptive. I'm just trying to describe what the sources say. Our personal opinions we could hopefully leave for another time, maybe after recorder's off. But actually, the need for sensitivity is something important, and that comes up in one of the sources here. I think we're running low on time, so I want to wrap up with one other idea. If you look over here, the Rabbinical Assembly, which is the conservative movement's version of the RCA, I believe, they have a legal committee, and supposedly they also put out tshuvos. The funny part is that it says that on the bottom of the first page, I put it on here, that even though we're writing a tshuva here, it's still up to each individual rabbi to decide how they want to go. So it's kind of funny in a way because they're making this whole authoritative statement, but then you say, yeah, but Yishai Yishor Ben Avyaseh, you can do whatever you want at the end of the day. Even if you disagree, you can disagree with us if you'd like, which is generally not the way it works in Orthodox tshuvos, which is, besides the fact that I think they're more thorough, and true to halacha, we find them to be binding. If all the rabbanim and all the tshuvos say to go one way, you know, your average Joe pulpit rabbi can't decide to make up his own new halacha or his own new halachic ruling. So that's just a fascinating thing. But what they say is that they misapply a certain halachic concept. At the end of their position paper or tshuva, they say that you could do anything. That's Latovas Achola. Look at the underline. For them, SRS, sexual reassignment surgery, is being done Latovas Achola for the patient's betterment and health, and therefore would be permissible, just as it would be permissible to help treat a physical ailment. I'll just summarize it in Tshuva. They go through a lot of what we did. They cite the Tzitz Eliezer, that the gender reassignment surgery is recognized as a legitimate transition. And then they go a step further on their own without, I think, any rabbinic precedent. And they say there's this concept out there called the Tova Sachola. If someone is in danger, I think a Pikoach Nevesh kind of case, you can do anything that's the Tova Sachola, right? So they think that because there is a suicide rate and there's a danger that comes along with gender dysphoria, if it's going to help the person psychologically and keep them from suffering psychologically and possibly even leading to suicide, then you could do the gender reassignment surgery. And they say you could, here's what they say, hormonal treatment would also be permitted and would not transgress the prohibition of wearing the garments of the other sex or changing that which was created, since it was a case of litovaso, for the good of the patient. Those are their words. Comes Rabbi Bleich, who we mentioned earlier, preeminent medical ethics authority in the Orthodox community. And he, in his interview, seen source number 6, doesn't really accept the Bikuach Nefesh argument. I'm a little unclear on why he doesn't accept it.
The statistics, I must tell you.
The statistics, yeah.
People play with statistics.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that the case that people make the other way around is accurate. And in fact,
right.
When they start doing these things to children, and so when they over a longer haul, what they find is that many times the people who are expressing dysphoria, depression, and so on over time, without surgery, these things pass, and then if they do surgery, it's not undoable.
Right. Okay, we're basically out of time, so I'm going to end off with one last source. Source number 9. This is an interview with Rabbi Bleich. So I'm going to assume that this looks like it's word for word. I can't judge how reputable the source is, but I have no reason to believe that this is not what he said. The Tzitz Eliezer, I don't know if it's become an accepted position. Definitely Rabbi Bleich doesn't accept it, and my impression is that the mainstream Orthodox world doesn't accept the Tzitz Eliezer's position that gender reassignment surgery can effectively and halakhically change the identity of the transitioning person. But this is something important to consider, and again, I preface by saying this is a sensitive topic. And even though we're here in a shiur, we talk about this almost from a certain degree an abstract perspective. There are real people out there that are struggling with this. This is a real issue, and for all I know, someone in this room might be struggling with it. I don't know. So Rabbi Bleich was asked this question, right? There's two things to consider. There's one, there's the halacha, and then there's, despite the halacha, even if I hold one way, it doesn't mean I have to be insensitive. So this is what Rabbi Bleich's response was, and I think this is a beautiful example of remaining firm to halacha and compassionate at the same time. And I generally don't like to take positions one side or the other, but I think this is really, I think this is MS. I'll quote, and we'll end with this. When asked how the Orthodox Jewish community should treat a Jewish transsexual who transitions, Rabbi Bleich explained, "I consider this patient to be ill and think they should be treated with compassion, but as a male with compassion, not a female with compassion. By the same form, I don't think the community can do things which give an indication of approval. Precisely what is appropriate in a given situation is hard to tell in advance." Maybe not exactly the words I would use, but I think the principle is something that at least I myself would accept practically, which is, it may be that the mainstream Orthodox position is not to recognize gender reassignment surgery as effectively changing a person's gender. And I would say, even according to Sadi Ezra, recognizes it, it's something that seems to be usher to do. It seems to be prohibited without equivocation. But just because something that's prohibited doesn't mean that we can't be sympathetic and that we can't try to say imo nochi betzara for the people that are going through that. This is like any issue. It's not just for gender reassignment surgery. I think it's for any LGBT or beyond that discussion, anyone going through any struggle. Even if they're doing something that's halakhically impermissible, we have to be clear that we don't approve of it. But nonetheless, they're human beings and they're our brothers and sisters, and we have to be here to help them in any way we can. So I leave that source with you to think about. And with that, I'll conclude for next year to begin. Thank you all for coming once again.
Yeah.